again now. Next time we have a little break, I'll make it a stretch one. You move, get up and move. Okay, let's come back together. Before I go on, I just want to try something with you. If you're white, could you put up your hand if you've had a black therapist? No one. If you're black, could you put up your hand if you've had a white therapist? Speaks volumes, doesn't it? Yeah. Right, so the next section is working as a white therapist. So how does this relate to working as a white therapist in a racialized field? I keep saying in a racialized field because I want to stress that when we're talking about black and white, we're not talking about something real, as it were. We're talking about a field in which race is a factor that people treat as if it's real. Okay. As white therapists, we inevitably bring with us the attitudes and assumptions of the white world, and these will necessarily affect our practice. I will show how various approaches have influenced me and helped me to work in a more aware way as a white therapist in this racialized field. These include theories regarding cultural difference, non-dual awareness, intersubjective systems theory, dialogic gestalt therapy, and the participative worldview that comes from action research. Okay. So if we start with theories regarding cultural difference, there are numerous differences between cultural groups, and these are often pointed out by authors who write about cultural difference. The focus is often on a description of other cultures, with a baseline of the white Western culture as the norm. Focusing on differences in this way lies at the heart of a great deal of the frustration that black people feel in relation to white people. It is similar to the way, for instance, that received pronunciation is considered the norm, so that from the point of view of those who speak in this way, others have an accent, which is often used in the field. In fact, True has pointed out that if we use the term different, which is often used in the field of diversity training, there is an implication that there is a norm to be different from, though this is never acknowledged or articulated. Of course, it's also useful to think about other cultures, those that are different from our own, and has been very instrumental in making people aware that cultural difference is an important factor when working in a diverse world. However, I am stressing the importance of focusing on our own cultural assumptions here because I'm trying to get behind how we, as white therapists, see the world. This is for three reasons. One, because the Western worldview is not the only or best way of understanding how to live. Two, the white Western culture predominates globally and is assumed to be the best way. And three, because the white Western way is problematic when it comes to taking diversity on board, as I will show. Of the many dimensions of cultural differences that have been identified, there is one that I think is particularly important and pertinent to difficulties white Westerners, and in particular therapists, have in understanding many other cultural groups. It concerns the importance afforded to the individual over the group. Our most dearly held values are built on the rights and responsibilities of the individual, and we as Westerners have a clearly defined image of ourselves as complete units, boundaried by our skin. This view is by no means universal. Although I'm not suggesting that Western culture is the only one to take this view, many cultures understand the family or the community to be the unit of society, so that responsibility is held communally and individuals do not have rights over the common good. Our attachment to our individuality has encouraged a narcissistic attitude in which our own sense of self is felt to be all important. This difference has many ramifications pertinent to our work as white therapists, beyond the relatively simple one of misunderstanding our clients who may see the world in a dissimilar way to ourselves. In this sense, my point is a cultural rather than racial one. Not all black people have culturally different backgrounds to white people, though it could be argued that black people's experience of racism is a cultural experience, thus giving them a different cultural experience as to white people, whatever their background. Some black people are steeped in a Western philosophical worldview, just as white people are, but many of our black clients will be culturally different as well, or will be second or third generation immigrants for whom these cultural tensions may be the backdrop of everyday life as they live in several cultures simultaneously. Their entitlement to individual rights and freedoms may not seem a simple matter to them. So how do we as therapists who regard our job as being to facilitate our clients towards becoming more authentically themselves ensure that they make choices which do not play into destructive patterns, work with people who do not think in individualistic ways? I have found, and this, we're coming on to non-dualism here, I have found that having a non-dual intersubjective way of understanding truth works for me in both worlds. It is a way of understanding truth not as an absolute, but as something that emerges between myself and others. It is a truth that arises in the space between us, thus belonging to both of us and neither of us at the same time. The stance of understanding truth to be emergent in the spaces between us has become more embodied in my practice and has led me to understand my work as an inquiry process in which the subjectivity of both myself and my client is acknowledged. The process of allowing a sense of what is true to emerge in the spaces between us seems to uncover what it feels to be a basic truth, whilst not denying its relational rather than objective nature. Stoller, Atwood and Orange say, we must attend to truth as possible understanding and not truth as correspondence to fact. If we are to discover the knowledge that arises in the space between people, it is often necessary to experience and acknowledge the differences that we find in that space. Skating over differences and rushing to find commonality can make the contact much more superficial, as the values and assumptions that underlie our attitudes will be hidden. Questioning these values and assumptions becomes all important, particularly when exploring differences in races and cultures. As we engage in dialogue across difference, our truth, that which arises between ourselves and our clients, emerges even if it contains conflicting ideas. For example, a supervisee once reported that one of her immigrant clients had a damaging and conflictual relationship with her 16-year-old daughter. As the client felt she should not mix with boys, that was not a view held by the therapist for her own daughter, but they sat with their different cultural values on this subject, and the uncomfortable clash that they felt between those held in her culture and those held in the dominant British culture. The therapist, nevertheless, could empathise with this difficulty and with having a stroppy teenage daughter. Finally, by thoroughly exploring the issues and by understanding this as a difference that had arisen between them, the client found a way forward which allowed her daughter to make friends with boys in a way which the client felt was safe, thus allowing the close relationship between mother and daughter to resume. In working in this way, we first have to question the way that we think when faced with differences, so as to allow ourselves to just sit with the conflict rather than rush to find a solution. Making sense of the world from an individualistic stance implies seeing it in a dualistic way. For this purpose, it is simplest to understand dualistic thinking as either-or thinking. The most fundamental way of understanding non-dualism is to see reality as the mystics from all religions view the world, as interconnected and undivided, not therefore opposing units. Dualistic thinking, on the other hand, views the world as divided into conflicting camps. Either something is black or white, right or wrong, male or female, etc. This dualistic thinking has informed Western philosophy over many centuries and eventually allowed the West to proceed with a project of colonialization, which is justified by seeing the colonized as an inferior type of human being. Dualistic thinking allows this kind of certainty and results in splitting the world into good and bad, us and them, etc. Western society is so steeped in these dualistic notions that we cannot avoid but be part of it. White therapists tend to give value to the flourishing of their individual clients, rather than the individual in the context of their environment as the aim of their work, thus reinforcing a split between the individual and society. Here is an example. A supervisee had an Asian client who rejected her mother's insistence on her having a marriage arranged by her family. Her mother was so worried by her having a European boyfriend that she was constantly on the phone to her daughter. I asked how she felt about this situation, and the supervisee said she thought the mother was very intrusive and that the client had a right to find her own way in life. This revealed a white-centric, individualistic way of seeing her predicament. I felt that it was likely that the client felt ambivalent about her situation with her boyfriend and her mother's concerns, and that holding the dilemma between them for a while to be thought about might be a more useful way of finding a way forward than just encouraging an individualistic solution, which would no doubt cut her off from her family and culture. A less reactive stance to her mother resulted, and they were able to explore the issue in all its complexity, which helped the client to move forward in a way which did not involve rejecting her family. So I want to come on to the intersubjective systems theorists now. They regard contemporary Western society as suffering from an epistemological mistake, that of believing in the myth of the separate mind. These theorists view the self as only existing within a co-created relational context, so very similar to the non-dualistic one. Bob Stolarow and his colleagues, maybe some of you are familiar with them, understand intersubjectivity to be an ontological state, a universal given rather than a developmental achievement, as Daniel Stern suggests. Although ostensibly psychoanalysts, they make it clear that they position themselves as phenomenologists, counter to traditional psychoanalysis, thus. The assumptions of traditional psychoanalysis have been pervaded by the Cartesian doctrine of the isolated mind. This doctrine bifurcates the subjective world of the person into outer and inner regions, reifies and absolutizes the resulting separation between the two, and pictures the mind as an objective entity that takes its place among other objects, a thinking thing that has an inside with contents and looks out on an external world from which it is essentially estranged. Intersubjective systems theorists understand their relationships with their clients to be co-created and regard the very nature of the self to be understood only within relationship. They challenge the view that the professional has special knowledge of the client that is only available to them. Instead, their work involves an exploration of what is discovered when the two meet. My own experience is that this intersubjective stance is helpful when working in a diverse society, although this has not been discussed specifically by the intersubjectivists. Only Lynn Jacobs, who is a member of the intersubjectivist school as well as being a dialogic gestalt therapist, has written on being white as a psychotherapist, which I mentioned earlier. Then I'm coming on to dialogic gestalt therapists. The intersubjectivist view is closely allied to dialogic gestalt therapy, which came to a similar view independently. This perspective opens naturally from gestalt therapy because of its espousal of field theory. Clarkson and McEwen describe the field as all the coexisting, mutually independent factors of a person and his environment. All aspects of the person and of his field are interrelated, thus forming a whole or a system. And Yontef says, the field is a whole in which the parts are in immediate relationship and responsive to each other. No part is uninfluenced by what goes on elsewhere in the field. And Parlett says, the essence of field theory is that a holistic perspective towards the person extends to include the environment, the social world, organizations, culture. the more assiduously we can navigate the various field theory maps, the more we are likely to perceive and recognize the indivisibility of people from their surroundings and life situations. Dialogic Gestalt therapists such as Heissner and Jacobs built on field theory and the philosophy of Martin Buber in the healing relationship in Gestalt therapy, a dialogic intersubjective approach. One of the authors, Richard Heissner, says, at the heart of this approach is the belief that the ultimate basis of our existence is relational or dialogic in nature. We are all threads in an interhuman fabric. As I've shown above, it seems to me that both intersubjectivists and dialogic gestalt therapists see the self as existing within relationship, and that their work entails understanding what arises in that meeting. This understanding is not a merely intellectual exercise, but is grounded in allowing deeper and deeper awareness of subjective experience. And now I'm coming on to participative worldview. A holistic way of understanding experienced reality and our place within it has been described by Reason as a participatory worldview, and is similar to the non-dual intersubjectivist stance shown above. The usual boundaries between different activities in our lives tend to break down when viewed in this way. In particular, those who accept a participative worldview accept the maxim, I cannot view any part of the world without myself affecting it. Peter Reason and Hilary Bradbury say, within this perspective, human persons are centres of consciousness, both independent and linked in a generative web of communication, both with other humans and the rest of creation. When reflecting on my own work, I view it in this way, so that I know that any experience I have is profoundly affected by my own presence and perspective. I cannot view my clients objectively. Our relationship is instead understood to be dialogic, intersubjective, and participative, one in which the subjectivities of both meet in the space between. In acknowledging my own whiteness, I understand myself to be participating in a cultural and racial field, and know that I cannot be separate from it. This field also contains its history, including colonialization and slavery, as well as dualistic attitudes which have permeated the culture over centuries. A non-dual way of thinking can serve a double purpose, as it helps us to work across cultures by challenging the way we split the world into good and bad, etc., and at the same time gives us an insight into some non-Western ways of thinking. As we have seen, some non-Western thinking is less dualistic in its understanding of the nature of self. For instance, the Southern African idea of Ubuntu, which can be translated as I am because you are, which reveals a less individualistic cultural assumption than is generally found in the white Western world. But does this mean that our desire to be true to ourselves, or authentic as human beings, has to be abandoned? John Rowan says that humanistic thought is fundamentally based on an idea that there is a real self. He goes on to say that if this idea is to be challenged, then it is not possible to honour the fundamental tenet of humanistic psychology that human beings are authentic, autonomous, and self-actualizing. However, in my view, we do not have to understand the self as a unitary structure in which all indwelling and potential meaningful experience belong to a discrete, bounded individual, or the self to be fragmented and meaningless, or just one possible discourse with a narrative context. If instead we understand ourselves to be embedded in a co-created participative universe which does not consist of separate things but of relationships which we co-author, then authenticity, autonomy, and self-actualization remain meaningful and exist within a web of relating rather than situated within an individual. We self-actualize within and through relationships. This non-dual web allows for difference among individuals and groups and is consistent with non-white approaches, such as the African notion of Ubuntu and the non-individualistic way of understanding the world found in Native American culture. So, some reflections on these approaches. My approach to the work brings together various concepts which all regard the individual as being inextricably woven into the web of their culture and environment, and as such, the individual cannot be made sense of as a separate entity. What is more, the cultural milieu in which each of us exists is redolent with its history, the past and present. The past and present experiences which give shape to its meaning. Because of this, a meeting between a black and a white person can be a very crowded space. White supremacy, racism, colonialization, slavery, etc., accompany them into that meeting within the intersubjective space. Field theory shows how past patterns and experiences are in reality still present as part of the field. This is graphically illustrated to be true in the work of Bert Hellinger, who, through constellations workshops, shows how family relating is badly affected for generations by past traumas and unresolved relationships. These influences naturally have implications for me beyond my professional life, but of course have profound influence on my work. I've come to see that there is a disciplined but free-floating being with which arises in the space between me and my client. I consider this way of understanding my relationships with my client to be highly suitable when working within a diverse society for three reasons. There is an attempt... Oh, I said three reasons and there are four here. There is an attempt to examine prior assumptions as well as an openness to appreciating others, thereby creating a broader base for understanding different and comparable experience. I understand myself within the field when working with my clients, so I do not regard myself as being able to be objective. There is an acknowledgement that the intersubjective field includes the past and present cultural realities of both parties. There is a natural loosening of the narcissistic idea of the importance of being right. In other words, I regard what arises between myself and my client as coming from or originating in an intersubjective field to which we both contribute. I listen both to the client and to my own responses in a way which brings Freud's term evenly suspended attention to mind. I become interested in and inquiring into that which arises in this space. In this way, the issues that do arise are not reduced to problems found in the client, which have nothing to do with my also being present. Clients, after all, experience their lives in a relationship, in a relational context, and my experience with them, more often than not, seems to be similar to that experienced by other people in their lives. This is an intersubjective way of understanding what psychotherapists call a transference relationship. Donna Orange has recognized a similarity but difference in this way of understanding the transference relationship by coining the word co-transference. So, just to conclude this part, in proposing a non-dual, intersubjective way of understanding our relationship with our clients, I am suggesting a significant journey away from our individualistic, dualistic assumptions, which will profoundly affect us in every nook and cranny of our lives, not just in our relationships with black clients. Rather unsurprisingly, the epistemology which leads to racism also leads to a great deal of other conflicting and destructive behaviour in other areas of life. It is a view in which we naturally lose not our individuality, but our attachment to our individuality, and in that sense is of a spiritual nature. Elias Amidan, a Sufi teacher, has this to say about non-dual awareness. As we learn to open to non-dual awareness, we start by noticing the vast field of our preferences and the thoughts, feelings, and actions that arise from those preferences. We just notice. Gradually, our noticing them begins to reduce our insistence and reactivity. there comes more space around our thoughts and feelings and actions. That spaciousness begins to be experienced as a greater and greater sense of equanimity. Serenity opens in our life. We no longer lead with our likes and dislikes and opinions. We simply are present to what is. No clamoring for it and no avoidance or denial of it. We accept what is because it is, including our emotions. Non-dual thinking leads us to be interested in our experience rather than attached to it in a narcissistic way. If we find an assumption or prejudice, we are interested in it. We do not hang on to it for dear life. We see our whiteness, for example, and think, what is this that we take so for granted? It helps us to loosen our hold on our ego identity and allows us to meet others afresh, without prejudice, including our clients, in a way which recognizes our own attachments and assumptions. We do not then punish ourselves for failing to do this, which merely creates another dualism. Instead of that, we notice it and hold it more lightly. So let's take another little break now. Maybe you'd like to get up and move around, go to the loo or something. We'll just have 5 minutes and then we'll come back for the last part.